Thank you for listening. This is KGVM 95.9 FM and KGVM.org, Gallatin Valley, Montana. Pull up the website at KGVM.org and check out all the programs. I'm Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, with Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist. We're happy to have the support of the Montana Psychological Association Public Education Committee. Mental health and other programs of interest are our focus. Thank you. Well, we will also thank the station genius manager, Bob Wall, for editing and producing this program. Now, Dr. Suzanne will introduce today's guest.
Last week, I read that about 40,000 people had been taken in by a scam that looked like a notice from a toll road group that was overdue, and it came across cell phones. It was a fake, but that many folks answered it and then suffered. I actually saw that ad on my phone. You might have too. It seems pretty obvious that we need help. And so I want to mention help is available. The Better Business Bureau, or BBB, is an American private 501c nonprofit founded in long ago, 1912. The BBB's self-described mission is to focus on advancing marketplace trust, consisting of 92 independent local BBBs in the United States and Canada. It's amazing, this was founded 113 years ago. It's not affiliated with any governmental agency, and businesses that do affiliate with the Better Business Bureau adhere to its standards. And to avoid bias, we should note that their policy with the BBB is to refrain from recommending or endorsing any specific business, although they still advocate for all business interests. They have a rating system that has an A-plus through an F letter grade scale, and it gives us their level of confidence in any business that's operating with them. And so currently, as of, maybe it's been a while now, 2022, 400,000 businesses were accredited by the BBB. We're happy to have them. We need them even more than ever. Even though they started 113 years ago, it's still very appropriate. And our guest today is Dale Dixon, Chief Innovation Officer for the Great West and Pacific Better Business Bureau. And Dale is here to talk to us today and to alert us to the myriad scams operating all around us, along with everything we need to know about the BBB. Welcome, Dale.
Thank you so much. It is fantastic to be with you. I appreciate the opportunity.
We really appreciate, particularly at a time when it seems that scams of every kind are just proliferating everywhere.
Absolutely.
And tell us maybe a little bit about your idea of what the BBB stands for and how we could, as people listening here, how we could use your services and benefit.
Absolutely. So I've been with Better Business Bureau since 2007. And when I started, and I started to learn about Better Business Bureau, the concept of a rising tide raises all boats is just what came to mind. And it can be a bit cliche, but there's a reason cliches are out there. It's because usually they work and they're a clear way to communicate exactly what's going on. So with Better Business Bureau, we believe, and we start with trust. We believe that when there is trust in the marketplace, trust is like the oil that makes an engine run smoothly. And trust between a buyer and a seller is crucial. When you go out and you need to have work done to your home and you invite a contractor into your home to do a remodel, or you invite a plumber into your home to fix a leaky faucet, you need to be able to trust that person who is coming into your home. And so Better Business Bureau is here to help people find those trustworthy businesses. And you did a fantastic job explaining exactly who we are and what we're all about. And we believe a set of standards leads to trust. And those standards are to build trust. We believe that businesses build trust three ways, really simple. And as you think about this in your own life, it's a fantastic opportunity to think about how you're building trust. But we build trust by having good relationships. We build trust, secondly, by being an expertise in our work. So that means always getting better, always working to improve, and doing an expert job in whatever task that we have before us. And then we build trust further by being consistent in those areas. So it's about good relationships. It's about being an expert in your work and being consistent in your work. That's trust. When you hear trust, it's an easy way to think about trust, those three ways. Businesses that aren't honest with you across the table and have, in their conversations, build trust. We believe that businesses that tell the truth in their advertising are more trustworthy. We believe that businesses that safeguard your privacy are more trustworthy. We believe that businesses that are responsive to you, so when you reach out with a phone call and leave a message, they return that call. When they tell you they're going to show up at a certain time, they show up at that time. Those businesses are building trust with you. So these are the standards that Better Business Bureau asks a business to live up to. So safeguarding privacy, being responsive, honoring promises that they make to you, and acting with integrity. We ask businesses to sign an agreement that they're going to uphold those. When they do, that business becomes BBB accredited. So we've done the vetting on that business. That business has signed an agreement, and then we're a third-party accountability partner for that business and that process. So how we're here to help your listeners, if your listener is a business, we can help you talk about and share the story of how you build trust. If your listeners are customers and they're looking to have something done in their house, looking to buy a car, whatever it is, and they're looking for a trustworthy business, go to bbb.org and look for an accredited business. That's where we help people find those trustworthy businesses. And then another way we help is that we are one of the areas, as far as our mission goes, we're here to help build trust, but we call out the bad guys. And I think that's why we're talking today, is to call out the bad guys, those who are scamming, stealing, defrauding people, and what to look for and how to better understand that. And Dr. Goodwin, you called me and asked if I would be willing, and I heard psychologist. I got so excited and said, I absolutely want to have this conversation, because I've dug deep into the psychology of why we as human beings fall for scams. And I'm very careful to use that word we, because it's just not one person. It's not somebody who's doesn't have a higher level of education. It's not somebody who is from a lower income class. It's not somebody who's older. It's all of us. I have sat on airplanes with doctors who have told me their story of being the victim of a scam. I've talked to attorneys who've been the victim of a scam. Some of the most educated people in the world are victims of scams. It happens to all of us when we're not on our A game, playing our A game and watching for it.
What's going on out there right now is prominent scams?
Oh, great question. So we're coming up on tax season. So, and I wanted to have Dr. Good remind me of and remind the audience of the scam that she started talking about that she received on her phone would be another great example. But, you know, tax season right now, so you're going to get messages on your cell phone. And I'm getting calls almost on a daily basis, voicemail messages on my cell phone that I owe taxes and the federal government's, you know, the IRS is waiting to arrest me or something like that. And I don't even let it phase me. I don't give it a second thought. I hit delete on the voicemail, hit delete on the on the text message, however it's coming in, the email. That's not the way the federal government communicates with you. If you do have a tax issue, there is no company that can step in and erase your tax burden, your tax debt. It's something that you have to do legally and by the book with, you know, with the IRS. There are some good companies out there that will help you navigate that, absolutely. But if, you know, you have somebody call you up and say, you have a tax debt, this is the IRS, and we're waiting to arrest you. If you you'll avoid arrest if you pay us right now, and usually that payment is going to be with a prepaid card, a gift card, or something like that. That's a scam, 100%. And we're seeing a lot of that because scams follow seasons and trends. And right now, as we're approaching April 15th, you know, less than a month away, everybody's talking taxes. That's what the scam artists are playing on. What's current? What's in the now? So that's a common one.
I find sometimes I get someone sends a copy of a bill that said that I've ordered this and I owe, let's say, $800, and I have no idea, and I didn't do it, and it alarmed me at first because I thought, well, I don't want my credit rating to be bad. Do I have to go ahead and just go through this? And I've learned just to delete those.
That is the best thing you can do, because what the scam artist is hoping to do is catch your attention and just get you curious enough to react. So when you say delete, that's the best thing you can do, delete, because it's just a sense of curiosity and that reaching out and making contact or returning contact to a scam artist is going to trigger something. It's the first step in sunk cost theory. So we talked about psychology and what this is all about. These are things that we all, as human beings, you know, have to understand about ourselves and work through. So sunk cost theory, it's an economic term specifically, but a sunk cost is any past cost that's already been paid and can't be recovered. Now, cost isn't just money, it's also your time. So the moment you respond to the scam artist that, in your case, you've got a bill that hasn't been paid or you owe money, you're starting to, I'm going to use that word, invest, because it's your time, into the human cognition problem of sunk cost theory. So you've invested time. And now that you've invested time, you want to see a result. So you're going to continue until you see a result for the time you've invested. And ultimately, they're going to want you to get to pay some money. And people are often quick to add money to the equation in these situations once they make contact. And to the person who says, yeah, but I like to play around with the scam artist and try to scam the scam artist or waste their time, to what end is my question? To what end? Would you walk up to somebody who, you know, heaven forbid, and I don't want, ever want this to happen, but crime is crime. You know, the person calling you or texting you saying you have a bill due and you owe money is a criminal. And just like a criminal who would walk into a bank in Bozeman and hold up a teller and demand cash, that's a criminal. That's a crime. But would you walk up to the criminal with a gun pointed at a teller, tap him on the shoulder and say, hey, let's hang out here a while. And you want to point that at me and see if you can get my money too? Because I'm going to play along and I'm not going to give it to you.
Good point. Thank you, Dale.
That's so, I mean, as I say that, that's so foolish, but it's the same level of foolish trying to engage with a criminal via text message. They're highly trained. They're highly skilled. They do this for a living. They live to work, to rip people off. And engaging with them opens up the opportunity for them to get more information about you, to share it in their dark networks on the dark web, and to perpetrate more crimes. And you're not just wasting their time. You're giving them information. And they know how to play you psychologically. And so sunk cost theory is the first way. And I've got a total of four psychological aspects that these criminals use to get into our pockets and get our money. And it starts, you know, the best example I can give you is I had a gentleman call me, and he was distraught that he had lost so much money. He had lost hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I asked, how did it start? And he said, I had somebody call me, and I responded to the phone call. So the first investment was time. They told me that I had, you know, in this case, it was a carrot. So carrot or a stick. Either they're scaring you that you owe money on a bill, or they're telling you, making a promise that they can give you something. And they had told him that he had won a contest, and all it took was $20 to cover the fees associated in order to claim his winnings. And he thought to himself, oh, this is probably a scam. He told me this. He said, I thought it's probably a scam, but it's only $20. It's worth it. I'm willing to gamble and lose $20 in order to remotely win the hundreds of thousands of dollars they're talking about. Well, he didn't understand sunk cost theory. The scam artist knew it well and played it to the hilt against this guy. So he gave the scam artist $20. And the scam artist came back in 1 week and said, oh my gosh, that $20 has opened up so much opportunity for you. Now we see that not only are you eligible to win the $200,000, but now you're in the running for $2 million. And all we need for you to do that, to get access, is to give us $200. Well, I've got $20 in. I can afford $200. Here's my $200. They kept ramping this up by 10x. And pretty soon, you know, the next week it was a $2,000 to get access to the $2 million. Oh, you're there. Now we need a $200,000 tax payment in order to release your funds. This tax payment's going to be made to the IRS. I'm going to give you the phone number and the agent number for the person who's going to take the payment. So it was coordinated. It wasn't the IRS. But because he had paid the first, he invested the time, paid the first $20, opened the line of communication, they strung him along, and he lost over $250,000 in the course of this scam.
Oh my.
And it started with $20 because sunk cost theory kicked in. And I know you've got listeners who are saying, that would never, ever happen to me. I would never do that. And I've got a story to explain how that works as well. But if you're still not grasping sunk cost theory, here's how it's happened to all of us. We have bought a ticket to a concert. Let's say bought a ticket to a concert. You paid for something. The day of the concert arrives and you're not feeling well. You wake up, you feel the sore throat. You're a little dizzy when you stand up, but you're thinking, hey, I paid money for this ticket to the concert. I'm going. I'm going to get my money out of it. You go to the concert. So you walk in, your immune system's down, and you suffer through the concert, and you walk away from that concert feeling even more sick than you did when you went in, and you're kicking yourself saying, why did I go to that concert? I've extended my illness by 2 or 3 days because I ran myself down. I went into a big group of people with a rundown immune system, and here I am more sick than before. Why did I do that? You did that because of sunk cost theory. You put the money into the ticket. You wanted to see a return on that money that you spent, and you suffered through it. And actually, you lost a lot more in the end. So understanding this sunk cost theory is really important when we think about scams.
There's another psychological principle that Arliss has talked about many years. It's called foot in the door principle.
Mm.
In that if you can just get that one foot in the door and start speaking to that person, it goes on from there, because once they've opened up that far, it's much incredibly more likely they'll continue to open up. And so we all need to be aware of the lure effect. In fact, you'll love this story, Dale. We have family members who are very much part of an event that happened a few years back in New York City. Some young college men in the dorm got onto their brother because he had just fallen in love with a young woman online, and he was just devoting all of his time to this beautiful, sweet young woman that he only talked with over the internet. And so one day they got him up, said, "Get up, we're taking you, we're going to go meet that person." They were at NYU University, and they drove upstate to meet this girl that he was so in love with. And it turned out it was like a 50-year-old woman with a disabled child and a husband at home who had borrowed a picture. And from that, they had filmed the whole thing. They were, after all, in film school at NYU. Okay, and they filmed even that lady and interviewed her about why she did that. And it was fascinating. And it went to the film festival in Utah.
Sundance. Uh-huh.
The Sundance Film Festival that year, and was a big hit. It was called Catfish, and it's still on the airwaves MTV. Today on MTV. Yeah. And that was some kids that we know very closely as part of the family. So you just, that foot in the door gets to you, and you just go there.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. That's a great story. And then what happens is, the next item on my list kicks in, and that's motivated cognition. Big fancy, a couple words, but it's basically the unconscious tendency of us fitting or processing information to a conclusion that meets our personal goal. So every piece of information that comes in, I'm processing it as an individual, as a human being. And if I'm not aware of this motivated cognition, there's a chance I'm going to process that information wrong, because ultimately I want it to fit my goal. So in the case of your friend, he was looking for love. And so he was processing all of that information that was coming into him as looking for love. And he was missing some of the big warning signs. He hadn't actually met this person and only seen pictures. And how do you know that the pictures are real? And I'm so glad you brought that up, because now with artificial intelligence, just the fact that my voice is on KGVM right now, and it's going to be online soon, any person can grab 15 seconds of my voice and put it into a program that's widely available. It's called 11 Labs. And they can type a script and they can make me say anything they want.
Wow.
Based on what they type in, because the artificial intelligence will recreate my voice, and the recreated voice, along with the text that somebody types into a computer, will generate me of an audio file of me saying whatever they want to type in. And so now the bad guys are using this technology to replicate the voice of somebody that we think we know. And they can do the same with images. So they'll grab my image and they can create a video of me talking and send it to a friend. And so we can't now, we have to be even more aware of motivated cognition, because, well, I listen to Dale on the radio, and I've seen Dale on TV out of Billings, and all of those things. I feel like I know Dale, and we see him, we hear him on media, and now all of a sudden I'm getting a personal message from Dale.
So it's good to be paranoid.
This is pretty cool.
And a conspirator.
Well, and that's a whole other thing that we've got to talk about, is like, how can you? It's being aware. And being careful, trusting but verifying, using the tools at your disposal to understand, and not just believing everything we see at face value, but also not, the last thing we want people to do is go hide in a cave because see the world as scary. Is if we want them to be aware and know how to navigate it, and understand that when I get an audio file or a video file from somebody who I know, I just can't take it at face value. I need to find a unique individual way to contact that person. Then when I say that, it's like I have their phone number. I'm going to call the phone number. I'm not going to click on a link that's in the message with the video or the audio file, and just take it at face value. I'm going to go outside the method of communication and find a way to connect with that person and ask, hey, did you send me something? Here's a scam we see a lot of, and that is an email that arrives from somebody you know with a document that needs to be signed. And you need to click the link, and what it's going to do is going to ask you to sign in to some account that you have, but it's really a fake, and it's just going to capture your login credentials, your username and password, to be used to get into your real information and steal that information. So somebody has figured out how to hack somebody else's email, get in, send an email to all of their contacts with this contract that doesn't exist. It's just a fake in order to get people's usernames and passwords so that that information can be added to databases and sold around the world to other criminals. So when you get an email from somebody who you think is a friend asking you to sign a contract, don't just say, oh, well, I know that person. I wonder what contract. I wonder, you know, my curiosity, my motivated cognition says, oh, my friend is sending me something that I need to look at, so I'm going to look at it. No, I'm going to step away from that and say, I'm not going to trust this email at face value. I'm going to call my friend because I have their phone number in my phone. Hey, did you send me a contract? No, I did not send you a contract. Somebody hacked my email. Oh, good. I'm glad I didn't click on that link.
Yes. I was wondering, there's something called confirmation bias. I think that fits in with your motivated cognition. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Confirmation bias is right there. I mean, it's probably they're one and the same, motivated cognition and confirmation bias. Confirmation bias or even selective perception is this thing that we only look for information that confirms our beliefs. So we avoid any information as human beings that contradicts something that we believe. We stay away from it. This is why I can't remember where I heard it, but intelligence is the ability to hold competing ideas in your head at the same time and process that. And so I'm always thinking about, okay, how can I hold these competing ideas? How can I be open and dive into things that might challenge previous beliefs? I'm teaching myself how to overcome selective perception, motivated cognition, confirmation bias, all of those things that make me susceptible to being scammed. And it's when we are self-aware in these areas, it helps us arm ourselves and put up a level of defense against the bad guys.
Very good. Very good. I remember working with victims of stroke and brain injury from war who had at least temporarily and hopefully would regain their cognition, but they didn't have the problem-solving capabilities to interact with somebody like this on the phone, and they were really likely to become victims. And so my phrase I taught them, and we actually practiced this over and over, even with a telephone, was, I never do business over the telephone. Simply, if anybody yes. called them about anything, said, I'm the bank, I'm the neighborhood HOA, whatever, asking for anything, I never do business over the phone. Now, how would you feel about that phrase for some of us out there?
That is a fantastic phrase for all of us, regardless. I mean, that's you take care of so many problems that way. The biggest sign that you're dealing with a scam is, number one, that somebody's called you out of the blue, claiming to have something to offer you or to take something away from you. That's like, when we as individuals initiate contact, we're much less likely to be the victim of a scam in a situation. When we respond to somebody reaching out to us uninitiated, like I didn't ask for the bank to call me, that means I need to be aware. And that's when I say, to your point, I don't do business over the phone. I will come down to the branch, or I have my branch number. I'm going to hang up and I'm going to call my branch and I'm going to have a conversation with the person at the bank that I know. And don't wait for a response. Literally just hang up the phone. I mean, I have a rule. I don't answer the phone if I don't know the phone number of the person calling in. And if it's a voicemail and they leave a voicemail telling me that, oh, I have passed the number of calls that I'm getting in the last several weeks that say I have taxes due and they can help me in my fight against the IRS. Well, I know I don't have taxes due. I work with an accountant. I'm very careful on that front. These are scam robocalls, plain and simple. They don't even get me concerned or worried, but I can easily see how people who have any question in the back of their mind would want to respond and return the phone call and say, what's this about? Or even just call and say, would you stop bothering me? Please just stop calling me and leave me alone. That alone is enough to invite more phone calls. Oh, we've got a live one. We have somebody willing to talk. That's all they need. So when you say, you know, if you do answer number one, don't answer the phone if you don't know the number. But if you do, and the person on the other end says, this is the bank, your advice is spot on perfect. I don't do business over the phone, and just hang up. And if you're curious or if there's a question in the back of your mind, could there be a problem with an account or with something, independently verify the phone number that you need to call to get an answer to that. Call up your local bank branch. A message from, oh, here's another scam we're seeing. You asked about the scams we're seeing right now. Here's a scam we're seeing a lot of right now. This is the Postal Service. You have a package and we can't validate your address. We need to talk to you.
We've gotten that one too. Yeah. Just ignore, yeah. Folks. Just ignore.
Just ignore. There is no package. You know, they're just dangling something. They're dangling literally fishing bait, but this time it's P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. They're dangling fishing bait in front of you, hoping you're going to bite out of curiosity of what could be sent to me. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
They're going to steal your information, steal your identity, lead you down the road of getting the first $20 out of you to get that package. And then they're going to keep telling you until they extract just as much cash as possible.
I would think there were a couple of particularly vulnerable populations, probably the older generation, but also one that we don't think about, younger, much younger people who use the internet and or have a free reign to it and order things that you wouldn't have otherwise, family would not have approved of. Do you see much of that?
Oh, 100%. In fact, we see we're seeing increasing rates of scam victims in the younger ages as, it's getting easier and easier to buy and sell on social media. And they have just learned to believe what they see on social media. Like, I don't believe anything I see on social media, absolutely nothing. But they'll see an ad pop up for something that they want, and without doing any checking, without checking with Better Business Bureau, anything else, they'll hit the buy button, they'll put a credit card in, or it be directed to a website to do that, and then all of a sudden nothing shows up and they've lost $20, $30, $50, $100. And then what are they going to do? Because they go back to find it and it's all gone. You know, that web page is gone where they thought they bought it. And also, it's so easy now to set up a web page, take credit card numbers, get the money, shut everything down the next day, and then do it all over again a different way. And just that's business. And it's happening globally. This isn't your neighbor in their mom's basement in Bozeman. This is literally a call center in Romania or somewhere in Russia or China, where there's a big, 10,000 square foot room full of computers. some of them automated on AI, others with people sitting in front of them on telephones. They've been trained in how to speak English. They've been trained on how to remove all or most of their anything that would give them away from being from another country. And they've spent, we as honest people can't wrap our minds around the fact that people would invest so much to rip somebody else off. But that's the case. It's big business around the world. And there are hubs, there are some hubs in Romania. There was a fantastic Wired magazine article where they tracked down some of these crime rings around the world. And it's just another business. And we need to, I'm going to use the word respect it as that, not from respect as in hold in awe, but respect as in understand the danger of it and stay away from it and not give them an opportunity to get in our, don't
like
have the conversation, don't respond.
A lion walking toward you. Yes.
Yes. You're going to respect that lion. Exactly.
And I read last week, as per your comment just now, they're using Dillard's, Macy's, some of the big line marketers online to scam people because they can, like you said, they can download that information. And I just read that they were really going to town with using known brands that people think, oh, yeah, I know them. I'm comfortable with this.
Triggers that confirmation bias. I have a Macy's account or yeah. I have a Dillard's account. Mm-hmm. The logo's the same. Well, guess what? Dr. Wood, you can go online and copy a logo off of any website and put it into an email and make it look legit and say you are from Dillard's. I'm not encouraging you to do this by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm making a point. It's so easy for any of us to do. We would never do it because we're honest, but the bad guys know how easy it is. And it's getting easier to make it look real. And now I can run I might not be a good writer, but I can take and get an idea of what I want to write. I can run it through artificial intelligence, have it clean up the sentence structure and make my grammar correct, and then put it in an email and make the logo look really good and make it look all official and send it out to millions of people with a snap of a finger. And all I need is 100 people to respond, and all of a sudden I've got money flowing in. And that's how they operate.
Yeah. You know, there's another one that kind of tugs on the emotional. I about several years back, I got a call, and you could tell it was a young man who said, "Grandma, I'm in trouble. Mm. I really need some help." And he was going to be asking for money. It seems like he was in jail. And I said, "Well, which grandson is this?" My grandsons were all 2 or 3 at the time. because he just called direct, and somehow I answered it. I have learned better. But I remember telling that young man, you sound very bright. It seems like to me you could find a better career than this, and you could do good for the world. And then I hung up. But, sometimes it's an emotional request to what they think could be a vulnerable person.
Oh, 100%. We call that the grandparent scam, and it's getting a whole new revival in the face of artificial intelligence because of the ability to recreate voices accurately. So let's say now that grandchild who was 5 or 6 at the time, 2 or 3 at the time, excuse me, is now 13, 16, has their own YouTube channel and or a TikTok and account, and they're making videos. So I have their voice. I grab that voice. I go to a program called 11 Labs, and which is legitimate. We even use it at Better Business Bureau for legitimate reasons. But I put the voice in, and I say, I need to recreate this voice, and I'm going to type in Grandma, this is me, and I have their name now because I have their social media account. You know, this is me, Timmy. I got myself in trouble. I'm in jail. I need you to send money. So you as grandma are listening to Timmy. You know Timmy's voice. Confirmation bias kicks in. And you know his voice. He's given you his name, so it's his name. Now you know what grandchild it is, and they lead you down the road. And now all of a sudden, you know what happens to us when cortisol kicks in, fight, flight, freeze. You know that what happens when we're scared? We don't think clearly, so we want to race to the aid of a grandchild, a family member in this situation. Their voice has been recreated perfectly. We have their name. We know they're in trouble. So now we stop thinking because we're scared, and we do whatever they ask. So really important that we understand all the tools at play in this space and how they're taking it to the next level in order to get money out of our pockets.
Dale, do you realize that you are scaring the liver out of me?
Well, and I definitely don't want to do that. I don't want to scare people. I want you to, you know, take a deep breath, and think through this, that I'm not going to answer the phone, and I'm not going to believe, I'm not going to answer the phone unless I know the number. It shows up on my caller ID. If it's important, the person's going to leave a voicemail. And if the person leaves a voicemail, I mean, let's play this out. So let's say you get a phone call from a number you don't know, so you don't answer, and you let it go to voicemail. And then you go back and you listen to the voicemail, and the voicemail is from somebody claiming to be your grandchild. The voice sounds just like your grandchild. They use the name of your grandchild. So, and they tell you to call a number because they're in jail, and you need to call this number because this is how you're going to reach me. So my question to you is, knowing what you know now, are you going to call the number that the person leaves you, or are you going to call Timmy's mom or dad or closest relative and ask the question, hey, where's Timmy? Oh, Timmy's standing right here next to me. Oh, so he's right there. Can I talk to Timmy? Sure. Timmy, how you doing today? I'm doing great, Grandma. Why are you calling? I just calling to say hi and check and make sure you're well. And you can walk away from that phone call knowing, because you knew the risk and the liability of that voicemail, you took the right steps to protect yourself and validate and verify that your grandchild's okay. You didn't respond you didn't react in the moment. You responded appropriately. Big, big difference between reacting and responding. So for your listeners, you know, it's so important that you're listening to this information and you're making time to be informed. That's why it's fantastic that you've got listeners to this radio show, because they're making time to be informed and they're putting themselves in a place to respond appropriately in these situations, not react out of fear. When we react out of fear, bad things happen. When we respond appropriately, we protect ourselves. Only way to respond appropriately is to be informed and knowledgeable and understand the world around us. And that's what we're helping folks do, not to scare you, but to understand the world around you so you can respond appropriately. And that's to not answer the phone when it rings if you don't know the number, to listen to the voicemail with a level of, the word I'm a guy. I've already used up all of my words for 2 days in the span of this interview. So, yes. You know, but I'm going to be suspicious of a voicemail that claims to be somebody I know and giving me a number that I don't know to call back, or that number to text or something. So I'm going to go outside of that, and I'm going to verify that that person or that account or whatever it is actually safe, secure, through numbers that I know to be true and accurate.
I recently got involved in kind of a murky, complicated scam. Turned out all right, but it had the possibility of not. I was on my computer and a pop-up ad came advertising a very well-constructed device that if you somehow wanted to break the window on a car to help somebody out, You could pound it with this thing, and it had extra strength from the inside. Somehow it got submerged in water and so forth. Well, during that process of ordering one of them, which was a good object and legitimate, there kept other things popping up to say, well, if you do this, it's two times as strong or three times or whatever, blah, blah. In the long run, what happened, I ended up ordering five of them, not knowing, I was ordering one. And then you actually get the device, which is a good device. But then when I said, no, I didn't do this, and you try to return it, it also gets more complicated, more time-consuming, and with the end result not being clear. So I decided, well, fine, I'll keep all five of them and give the other four for Christmas presents. So that was okay. I would have probably spent that much money anyway. But you can see I was being led down with a legitimate item, with misleading kinds of additional advertisements that I got caught up in.
So, yeah, that's an open door for me to encourage people to rely on Better Business Bureau. So Better Business Bureau was actually started inside of Coca-Cola back in 1912.
I read about that. I love this story.
Yeah, so Coca-Cola, this was what we call the days of yellow journalism. You can go back and look it up, but basically the most well-known brands were making promises and telling potential customers things about the brand and the product, that can cure everything. And they were making wild claims, and nobody held them in check. Well, people started complaining about it and noticing that, I might be able to have a Coke and a smile, but Coke's not going to do everything else. And Congress started paying attention as well, and started holding hearings, and Coca-Cola was under the spotlight in this situation. And the advertising executive Samuel Dobbs for Coca-Cola knew that the spotlight was on, and he had created some new advertising copy, and he walked it into the Coca-Cola attorney and said, "Listen, we're under scrutiny. We want to make sure that what we do is on the up and up, is honest, and we're doing the right thing, because I don't want to get any more scrutiny. Would you look at this advertising copy and let me know if it reads okay to you?" And the attorney didn't even look at the piece of paper, slid it back across the desk, and said, "I am not wasting my time reading one word you people say. Nothing is believable." And that kind of put, Sam Dobbs back on his heels. He said, "Even people inside the organization don't believe what our advertising says. That's a massive problem. We're going to start losing this communication tool of advertising." So we got together with his colleagues and counterparts at other big brands and said, "We've got Congress looking at us. We're going to start getting a lot of rules and regulations thrown at us that are not going to make life very fun. We need to do something about this ourselves." And they came up with a plan to self-regulate to a set of ethical standards, that we're going to hold each other accountable to a set of ethical standards and advertise honestly. And that's what Better Business Bureau is today. We're a set of ethical standards. Tell the truth, be honest in advertising, be responsive, safeguard privacy, honor the promises you make, act with integrity. Those are the standards for BBB. Businesses say, "I'm going to live to those standards. I'm going to sign a document saying I'm going to do that. And I'm going to partner with BBB to be my accountability partner." So for your case, Dr. Wood, when you talk about, this business, I ask you, was the advertising honest in that situation that pulled you in to begin with? And based on what you said, I don't think it was very honest. They didn't tell you that you're going to be led down the road to add more products, to be encouraged to buy better products, that they were showing you the least beneficial product to hook you, and then they're going to lead you down what we call a funnel in order to pay more in order to get the better product. It's like they should have been honest and forthright about that from the very beginning. Yes. And so that's where people can check, get the name of the business selling that product and go to bbb.org, type it into the search bar, and see how that business is rated. You talked about an A through F rating. That's an opportunity to see, and you can read customer reviews on the business. You can look and see where people have complained about the business and how the business responds to it, and get a much more clear picture and make an informed buying decision that way.
Yeah, it's called scatterx.com. And I find out when I got the more than one object, it was actually a foreign address. I think it was in Eastern Europe, actually. So the product itself seems very good, but the method of selling it and pulling you in is not.
And I was going to go over again, Dale, if we could, how people out there could... Well, there's several things. They could ask about a potential business, or if they've had a particularly bad or good experience with a local business, would they report that to the BBB? Tell us how you interact with the public out here, say in Gallatin Valley or anywhere.
The most effective way is through our website. I mean, we're like every business now where it's online and we have all of the tools available. You can interact with us, and it's BBB for Better Business Bureau, bbb.org. And when you get there, all those things that you said, if you have had a great experience with a business, we would love to hear about it. So you could go to bbb.org, and you're going to see a big search bar right there. You could say, oh, you know, I had a experience with this plumber, type the name in, pull it up. Once you get to what's called a business, you know, the next thing that'll come up is a business profile for that business. You'll see all the information about that business, its letter rating, its grade, and you'll see a box that says leave a review or file a complaint. And if you had a great experience with that business, leave a review. Click leave a review and just type the review just like you would anywhere else. Tell us the story of how I found this business. I called them. They came into my home. They were very clear about their pricing. They did exactly what they said they were going to do. They were really quick about it. They were there when they said they were going to show up. They did the work they said they were going to do, and I'm really happy. And that helps people make better buying decisions. That helps your neighbor make a better buying decision when they're out doing research. Now, if you call that plumber in and the plumber said they were going to be here on Wednesday and they didn't show up until Friday, and then when they did show up, they told me, oh, it's not going to be the original price we quoted. It's going to be, you know, $200 more, and oh, by the way, you've got a leaking faucet, and if you don't get it fixed, you're going to cause water damage in your home, so we need to do it right now, and you feel under the gun, you feel pressured, you feel like you overspent, you feel like the person wasn't honest, then you can come to Better Business Bureau, and then the plumber leaves and your faucet still leaks after paying all that money, then you come to Better Business Bureau and you can file a complaint. And we have tools in place through that website, and trained mediators, arbitrators in place that will help you as a consumer work with that business to get the job done right. And businesses see that as a huge benefit, because no, you know, we're all human. We're all going to make mistakes. No business is perfect. The businesses understand that, and the great businesses see BBB as a resource to help them with their customer service, to make sure the job gets done right. Customers can turn to BBB to help make sure the job gets done right as well. So, yeah, it's a fantastic tool for folks to go to the website, and everything is right there in that search bar. Just type the name of the business that you're looking for, and you can find it.
Question on that. Does that particular business that you're reporting on need to be a member of BBB in order for you all to take this on, or will you keep comments about any business? We might not know, for instance, if they're a member of the BBB.
Yeah. Great question. And we're working really hard to get every business inside what we call our database, so our list of businesses, whether they are a member or not. And you can complain about a business that's not a member, and you might have that problem. We don't have every business in our database. There are so many new businesses starting up every day. It's impossible to keep track of all of them. Nobody does. But we're working. We've got teams of people that are working hard to get business information in. But no, you do not have to be, the business does not have to be a an accredited member in order for you to write a review or file a complaint. Even if you can't find the business in our database, we have a process that you just give us the information you have about the business, and we will start doing the research and getting the information on that business and start working on your behalf as the consumer to resolve that situation. Whether the business is a member in our database or not in our database, we'll go to work on that.
Fantastic.
How much money is lost per year in scamming?
Oh, I don't have that number off the top of my head. And a few reasons for that. There are estimates that it's in the billions of dollars. I know it's in the billions of dollars that's lost. But there's another reason why, even if I had an exact number, it's not going to be accurate. And that is because of the number of people who are ripped off and don't say anything about it. And never report it. So just the reported number is billions of dollars a year. But then you factor in the unreported, and it grows even more than that. It's a big industry.
Why is it so hard to find and catch these people?
The reason why it's so hard to catch and prosecute the criminals in these scam situations, the reason's twofold. The first reason is that it's global in nature. It's really easy to use the internet and to go into an internet cafe, Romania, China, Russia, anywhere around the world, set up shop, commit the crimes digitally over the internet, and then shut it all down and disappear. So it makes it very hard to know where the people are coming from. And you can't trace it. It's just the technologies available to make it very hard. So global in nature, number one. Number two is it's relatively small dollar amounts in the grand scheme of things. Now, if you're the victim, 100%, it's not a small dollar amount. Hundreds, thousands of dollars, it's real money, and it really hurts. And 100% understand that. But when you look at it in the context of what else is going on in the world when it comes to crime, and the kind of crime that makes the news, where law enforcement is focused on bringing people to justice, law enforcement looks at that, the totality of those two reasons. That number one, it's global. They set up, they disappear. How do we even track them? You can't find them. And number two, relatively speaking, is a small dollar amount. Even if it's $5,000, $10,000, we can either try to track that down, and we know that we have a 98 to 99% failure rate trying to do that, or we can spend our resources going after somebody, the person who robbed a bank for $500,000 and hurt somebody and threaten somebody's life, or we can go after a kidnapper or a rapist. We can put our resources into keeping the community safe. It's only natural, and it's, I would call it, only smart that the law enforcement is going to focus on that work in the community to keep it safe, because you can't find the person who is global in nature committing these crimes. So two reasons, and that's why personal responsibility comes into play. It's up to each one of us not to be the victim. That's why we don't respond to the phone calls. We don't respond to the text messages. We don't answer the emails. We don't click on the links in social media ads. We just ignore them. That's the best way to make it go away.
This has been so extremely helpful.
Yes,
Dale.
Thank you.
And
absolutely.
For one thing, for sure, I'm going to have all my kids and grandkids listen to this, and everyone should. And we will be in touch, and you can be in touch with us if any new scams come up that we all need to hear about immediately.
Definitely. Thank you so much for letting me chat with you for the hour. It's been a lot of fun. I really appreciate the opportunity, and Better Business Bureau is definitely here to help.
Thank you, Dale Dixon and Better Business Bureau. Thank you, Gallatin Valley. Listen again to KGVM 95.9 and KGVM.org. See you later. Thank you.